There's nothing. I mean this. I've got a vacation that starts a week Friday, so the 27th. And because I always believe it's important to take 1 2-week break per year. Because 1 week, I don't care what your job is, 1 week out of the office doesn't feel like anything, and then boom, you're back. But if you get away for 2 weeks, then it really...
The second week you actually relax.
It feels like got away. So I go away on the 27th, and I'm not back till Monday, August 13th. And I promise you this. You know how O-Dog and Noodles love to give Hayes crap, because his first day back from a vacation, he's in a bad mood. I can't speak for what puts Hayes in that mood, but I'm telling you, when I wake up on Monday morning, August the 13th, the first thing I'll wonder, have you forgotten totally how to do this? I don't know what it is, but after like 2 weeks of not being on the radio, it's the stupidest fear in the world. And there could be somebody listening right now who thinks I've never known how to do any radio, and that's fine. But what I'm saying is I'll wake up and I'll be like, oh my God, when I hit the on button, am I going to remember that words have to come out of my mouth? And they not just have to be words, they have to be coherent.
And you're looking at three cameras and saying, which camera am I supposed to be on?
The one with the red light. The one with the red light. And then that's you're like good. Half off for like 2 seconds. Oh, I got to turn over this one.
Well, the old adage is like riding a bike. When you were hurt in hockey and coming back after being out for 3 weeks or whatever, there's that respectful fear of being able to continue to do it. I mean, it just is. That's what drives people to do it. But it is... there is a fear factor in being away from it.
When you were hurt and you'd come back, how long was it? A shift? Was it a period? Yeah, did it take you to feel like you were back at the speed, at the pace of the game that you needed to be?
It depended on the injury. It really did, because if it was an injury where your legs weren't affected in any manner, your skating was good. You know, if it was an arm or shoulder or something like that. But if it was something leg-related, there was that little bit of hesitation.
Because you couldn't skate?
Because I could skate, and that was my asset. And if a little bit of that were removed in any manner, you're like, yeah, I'm going to be a little bit hesitant here, you know, going to tiptoe into it. And then you go out and get run over on the first shift, and you'd be like, I'm into it. I have no choice but to be into it.
I'm awake now.
I'm awake, exactly.
Was there a lot of truth to the go-off adrenaline for that first game or two back, and then you hit that wall from, like, games 3 to 6?
Yeah, absolutely. And it all varied. Once again, probably the most challenging injury coming back from was a badly broken jaw, you know, because it was your head area. And then when you came back, you had a full face cage on. You know, yeah, I had a full visor and a guard, a mouth guard on. And that one coming back from, you were looking around in every possible direction to see what was coming from where.
Yeah, I can't imagine the pain of... I remember Matt Sundin took that puck in the face in one of his last years in Toronto, and all the chiclets were...
Yeah, mine was a full slap shot from about 20 feet away. And it separated the bone and the jaw, like total separation. And... yeah, it was Eddie Olchuk that stepped out and took a slap shot. And I never saw it coming. I stepped out from behind one of his defensemen, and it literally separated everything in there. And I remember skating towards the bench, and as I looked, everybody in the bench had their head down, like nobody would look at me.
Yeah, look, because...
yeah, this can't be very good.
If you don't handle blood and all that very well, good. You might puke on the bench. Yeah. Logan Couture on his Instagram account a few years ago, when he badly hurt his jaw, he showed a photo of whatever that... device is that forces the mouth to stay open as they surgically fix it. And
one of the funniest parts about that, and it wasn't funny at the time, was it was in Winnipeg, and they said, we can just close it, but in order to fix it, you're gonna have to be here for a couple of weeks because you won't be able to fly. And I said, well, I'd rather go with the team tonight. It was in Boston, playing for Boston. So the team was going to Minnesota that night. I had an option to go with them on the charter and then fly home the next morning and get it done. And that the Boston doc was the head of maxillofacial at Mass General, so I'm like, I'd like him to fix my jaw. I had to walk across the tarmac. It was like the 28th of December in Winnipeg to get to the plane.
Minus
40 degrees or whatever it was.
Don't need an injection. My face is froze.
So my teeth started chattering, but it was like a cartoon because the jaw wasn't attached. So your teeth were chattering, but the jaw wasn't attached. You're not a very comfortable injury.
Because you've got a scar on the right side of your chin. Is that where that's from?
Yeah, 75 stitches on the outside.
Wow.
Yeah. opened up pretty good.
Would you call that the worst injury you had?
It was the most uncomfortable. I had, you know, different things that probably bothered you more at the time, but it was incredibly uncomfortable.
The guys tell stories, Pooley, and, you know, we sit here with microphones in front of our faces and we analyze game after game after game over the course of a season, and somebody's in a 7 or 8 game goalless drought and he's one of your better scorers, and it's easy to forget, like, there could be something going
on. He's torn a little bit of cartilage in his ribs or
yeah, like
something that would keep you in bed for 2 weeks.
To use that example, I mean, Joe Thornton effectively got run out of Boston because they lost to the Habs that 1 year in the playoffs back in, what would it have been? 04-05 was the lockout, and he was traded in November of 05. So it would have had to have been before 03. The year-long lockout. They lost to the Habs, and he was like pointless in the series. And it came out afterward that he was playing through a couple of broken ribs or something like that, and it still wasn't enough to get him forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we forget what these guys go through over the course of a season. Well, why has this guy not been productive over the last 10 games? Well, they're not required to tell us.
It's almost like you're better off just sitting out rather than trying to persevere.
Yeah, because
at certain times,
because then we know you're hurt and we can't be critical
can't
of you.
Heap abuse upon you.
When you're sitting up there and in the press box, right? But that's what you sign up for. That's what Johnny T signed up for when he came here, is a constant analysis of his play. I'm waiting for that first take. I'm waiting for that first take when he's goalless for 4 or 5 consecutive games.
Well, the beauty
of
that
situation. Do they regret this signing?
You know what? He'll be doing so many different other things that it won't. That's where he's.
Well, that's where.
That's where he contributes.
But that's where you come in, and you.
I relay that to you.
You tell
how important he is.
You tell dumb dumb radio voice guy to cool his heels just a little bit.
And how much pressure he's taken off teammates, and how the matchups are favoring teammates, and here's what his teammates are doing, and how he's still passed this person the puck this many times. And yeah, he's a really good player.
Yeah, he's going to be all right. The Leafs, I think, are going to be all right, too. And Hellebuyck gets his contract last week. Marc-Andre Fleury was already making more on an AAV than Freddie Anderson, so I don't lump him in, even though he got an extension at more money from Vegas. Off the top of your head, Freddie Anderson, among the 31 starting goaltenders in the NHL, Pooley, where do you think he ranks? Just off the top of your head, where do you think he ranks in terms of AAV on his salary?
So when I think of ranking, oh, in terms of AAV?
Like in terms of what his AAV, his annual cap hit out of the 31 goaltenders, where do you think he ranks in the NHL?
14th.
He's 17th. Because Hellebuyck was behind him, jumped in front of him. Fleury was ahead of him, stayed there. When he, you know, 5-7, 5-7. 17th out of 31. And
yeah, and the deal was signed a couple years ago.
And when Hellebuyck signed, I thought...
Foley's notoriously underpaid.
I thought to myself, I've always
where
felt
do you
comfortable...
Think he, do you think he's top 10? Top?
No, I think he's... I've always been comfortable with the Anderson situation since he arrived
here. I think you should be.
And the fact that they got him locked in for 3 more years.
You overpaid a little bit on the front end, and yet...
He's paid in the bottom half. He would be first place of the bottom
half.
Well,
you always think of who you would
take goaltender
ahead
salaries.
Of, Scotty. That's, you know, like list the goalies you would take ahead of him. That's the question you would ask in terms of a pure payment schedule. But so much of it is when contracts are signed. Like, I think the Hellebuyck deal is a good deal. He's 25 years old. He signed a 6-year deal, not an 8-year deal. But to his benefit, if he has 6 good years, if he has 5 good years going into that 6-year, he's only going to be 30 years old. He's going to get a good 4 or 5 year deal.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Carey Price got an 8-year deal. He's an exceptional goalie.
Right. And he got it to take him through his 30s.
Well,
it effectively kicks in now that he is 30. Fred Van Vliet of your Raptors a little bit later on this hour. Time to go down to Washington, D.C., the site of the MLB All-Star Game. So it's Home Run Derby tonight, the game tomorrow, and the schedule will resume very lightly on Thursday, kick back into full gear on Friday. Pedro Gomez of ESPN is with us on Overdrive. Pedro, how are you?
I am good, fellas. I'm here in muggy, very muggy Washington, D.C.
Yeah, is Washington hot this time of year? You never be too sure.
Well, there was about an hour ago, and it really elevated the humidity level considerably. I mean, it's already hot, but the humidity, as you know, is worse than the actual heat.
All right, Pedro, I mean, we'll get into the Derby and the game, and it's, you know, the annual mid-season celebration of the sport, and it's for all the sponsors and for TV. But I would think, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but I would think that kind of the scuttlebutt and the big news down there is the fact that Manny Machado is going to be traded by the Orioles soon, and it feels like it may happen before the players all go their separate ways after tomorrow night. What is the latest you're hearing on the Machado front?
Yeah, it's funny because the players were all just available to the media about an hour and a half ago, and I asked Machado that. I said, what is it like to be you right now with all of this trade talk and speculation going on? And he said, you know what? It's out of my control. There is absolutely nothing I can do, which is true. It's not like he has veto power. It's not like he can dictate where he goes. The Orioles are going to make the best trade possible for them. A lot of speculation that it very well could happen before this weekend. But you can also see if the Orioles don't get a deal that they like, they may just wait closer to the July 31st deadline and see if the price goes up.
Our friend Rock Kabatko of Masson, the Mid-Atlantic Sports Network, is suggesting that the Brewers, Phillies, and Dodgers are the three teams in on Machado. Are those the three that you believe are fronting the pack here? Is there a fourth or a fifth that could jump in?
I mean, you never know. Somebody could obviously just decide, okay, let's give them the farm and just get him. And that could be an unnamed team out there. But those are the three teams that I've heard of being the most serious. And Milwaukee right now, because they've lost five or six in a row heading, you know, before the All-Star break here, they're the ones that a lot of people believe could be more speculative of doing this deal because they know they have a good team, but they were a little bit exposed this past week and some of their flaws were shown. And so adding a guy like Machado could very well be what puts them over the top. I asked Lorenzo Cain what message it sends to a team because he was in Kansas City a few years ago when the Royals front office said, you know what, let's go get Johnny Cueto. And they ended up winning the World Series. You saw it last year with the Astros. They went and got Justin Verlander, and they won the World Series. So I asked King, what does that do? What kind of message does that send? He said, it tells the players that they are all in with us, and we believe in you. Basically, that's the message from the front office. So I would say that the Brewers may be losing these five or six games before the break could kind of push them into a position of saying, we're too heavily invested this year, screw it, let's just do what we have to get them.
And yeah, Pedro, that was the team that surprised me out of the three between L.A., Philly, and Milwaukee, that team would, in fact, be as heavily mentioned as it is.
Yeah, I mean, they're having a spectacular season. They've got a lot of pieces, but you can see if they were to add somebody like Machado, it would be pretty amazing.
With Pedro Gomez of ESPN, it's Scott MacArthur, Dave Poulin, Overdrive on your Monday. You're listening to TSN 1050. So the Home Run Derby goes tonight, Pedro. And, I mean, of the eight players, just one is out of the American League. And that's Alex Bregman, the third baseman of the Houston Astros. Now, I'm told that you just did a hit on SportsCenter for ESPN. You told a pretty interesting story about this kid. Why don't you pass that on?
Well, Alex was, remember, a high pick. I mean, he was one of the first five picks in the draft when he came out. So he kind of moved through the system quickly. And the home run derbies take place at every level of the minor league system as well. So they're at the AA All-Star game, and there's a home run derby. And he is one of the participants. And the very first pitch thrown to him hit him in the head. And he was done. He did not hit a home run during the derby after that. But then he comes out and hits a home run on the first, he was the first, the leadoff batter. He hit a home run to lead off the game for his side in the AA All-Star game. And I asked him about it. He said, oh, of course I remember that. There's no way to forget it. And hey, if I get hit and hit a home run tomorrow night, I'll take it.
I'm a huge contributor to that Astros team. And I'm just thinking of that Houston team. Pedro, would you peg them, understanding that moves are going to get made here over the next couple of weeks, would you peg them as a favorite to repeat? I thought the Chicago Cubs would have a real strong shot at repeating last year, and it turned out that it was very clear the Dodgers were a lot better team in the National League, and we know Houston went out and eventually beat Los Angeles in the World Series. But as anybody goes, understanding the Yankees are great, the Red Sox are great, I think that Houston team, especially with its starting rotation, if it can get a bullpen piece, is primed to potentially be the first repeat in quite a while.
I don't think there's any doubt that they absolutely are the best team in baseball right now as we stand here in the middle of July, A to Z. They are loaded. They have offense. And don't forget, Carlos Correa has been injured, and they're still not really missing a beat. They have not lost more than three games in a row all season long, which is pretty remarkable. And, you know, considering some of the pitching you run up against in either league, they're not nearly as flawed as other clubs are. And for that reason, yes, right now today, the Astros, without a doubt, are the best team in baseball. And yeah, I would peg them to repeat right now. Things can change, obviously. You know, Machado goes somewhere and that team starts lighting it up. Things can change, but Houston is a very good roster right now.
Pedro, you're busy, and we certainly appreciate the few minutes you're able to give us. Let's catch up again very soon.
Okay. All right, guys.
Pedro Gomez from the field in Washington. The Home Run Derby tonight, the game tomorrow. And, you know, the Machado news to me is the one thing that I'm looking for.
It's interesting when on a field of all-stars, you are the focal point to that degree.
Well, he is. And I know Jay Happ, a lot of the local Toronto beat that is down there, Rob Longley of the Toronto Sun and others, asking a lot of questions of Jay Happ, because today is also the day of the media availability. They set up a hotel ballroom. American League players are each at their own respective podiums. Same for the National League. And you can wander around and talk to any of the players. And Jay Happ was getting bombarded, and I think there's an expectation, quite rightly so, that he's going to be moved in the next couple of weeks. But Machado, because with baseball, Dave, and you know this, you've got to have 6 years of major league service time before
that special word, control.
Before you hit free agency. And a lot of these guys, they break in at 22, 23, 23, 24, which means you're 28, 29, 30.
Well, look 30. At Josh Donaldson.
He was even later. So you don't hit free agency until about 30 years old, typically speaking. And what are we learning in sports science and from all the data these days? That when you're into your 30s, the decline begins, especially in the post-steroid era. Manny Machado is 26. Bryce Harper is 26 years old. These guys are going to free agency with half their 20s left. Now, Harper's having a down year by his standards. Machado?
Is he having a down year because of this?
I can't answer that.
Because of the pressures of it?
I can't answer that question.
It's kind of interesting.
There's
been a lot of burden put on him, too.
And that's a Washington team that can't help but stub its toe. I mean, it's a 500 team.
He hasn't done it.
But Machado goes into free agency this year. And it was interesting earlier on today, Steve Phillips on our radio station said, it's actually Manny Machado who is more likely to get the quote-unquote Bryce Harper contract than Bryce Harper himself. And what Steve is saying is 10 years, 350.
Wow.
It would be my guess. North of $300
million.
Now, would
that be positional a little bit for you as well?
Could be. I mean, some of the defensive metrics are not as favorable to Machado at shortstop as they are at third base. But when you're getting that
but
bat,
you have an option to move to third base as well.
Well, and he played third base for a number of years in Baltimore, and they moved on from J.J. Hardy because going into free agency, he told them, he said, hey, I want to play shortstop this year, which was, when he was growing up, his natural position.
He'll look to be moving back at some point.
You're signing for quality of player through still a significant portion of his prime. And I'm going to look to this deal as a barometer, because after 2020, so you play 2019, you play 2020, if he doesn't re-up in Anaheim, Mike Trout And I'll have to check the age just to be sure, but I think he'd be 27 or 28.
Because he was one of the few that got there before control, before he was out of control. They paid him early.
Yeah, they bought out three free agency years, and he's now into the first of those three free agency years that the Angels bought out. He's getting paid a little more than $34 million each of this year, next, and in 2020.
This is interesting, Scotty, because you're going to hear more and more of this with hockey. And Tom Dundon, the new owner in Carolina, is one of the guys that's looking at it and saying, why do we give up control as early as we do? And Alex Anthopoulos used to ask me that question. You guys essentially control a hockey player for 7 years, and you give it up after 3 years. Now, you buy into free agency, but after 3 years, or after 2 years, you're making a decision after 2 years of watching a player, an entry-level deal, to sign him for 8 more years?
So you're giving up control even though his free agency is restricted at that point?
Well,
because you have
through 7 years, your 3 years entry-level contract, your next 2 years are restricted free agency.
Pre-ARB.
Attaining ARB rights through those years, depending on number of games.
Right.
Then your last 2 years, so a total of seven, you're still under control by RFA with arbitration. And yet, in hockey, we've been far too reluctant to give it up way too early. And this goes back to Edmonton signing all those long-term deals.
With that in mind, and I don't want to be...
No, we can't get bogged down in numbers here.
But I don't want to be bringing the storm clouds in 2 summers out. But is that the next point of attack for owners in the CBA negotiations when they reopen?
Because
they've got their hard cap.
It is.
They've scraped away at the players over the last, what, 3 or 4 CBA negotiations?
Yes, they have.
This is the next front line in the war.
It is, but look at the overall dollar increase by players as well. I mean, look at where the cap is at. You know, and this year it's there without the huge 5% inflator. I think it was 1.5% is what
I think it was Ray. You've talked about this before, but Ray Ferraro was tweeting about this. Like, the Leafs go and get Tyler Ennis on a $650,000 league minimum contract for 1 year.
You're going to have
the middle class is gone.
You're going to have and have nots. There's no question about it.
I think the Leafs are a prime example of this. Kyle Dubas believes he can keep this core together. You got Tavares at 11. You're going to have Matthews in the neighborhood of 11. You're going to have Marner. Where's Marner coming in? 7 or 8 or higher than that, a little lower. Depends. That they'll use comparables.
That'll be a really, really intriguing one to watch.
Nylander's going to be in there.
So you get core guys, and then you get a lot of players that are in the, you know, under $1 million, because then they can be sent to the minors without the risk of cost.
Yeah. Fred VanVleet of the Toronto Raptors is going to jump in and join us. He's got a new 2-year contract. He bets on himself, that guy. And you've got a question to ask him, too.
I got a few questions.
You got a few questions to ask Freddie VanVleet. He jumps on. It's Scott MacArthur. It's Dave Poulin. It's Overdrive on your Monday, TSN 1050. This is like driving home with Dave Poulin right
now.
Get
into locker room music. Like, who's controlling the music in the locker room? Big issue.
Huge issue.
Ray Bourque had his own set list. Like, he had a set list.
When Russell Martin arrived before the 2015 season, he organized the genre by day. And it was posted on a pillar in the clubhouse.
Well, he's got a little bit of a music background, too, okay? I mean,
Monday is country, Tuesday is this, Wednesday is that. There's some Latin flair in there and all that. Because in baseball, even more so than hockey, Pooley, you've got guys from varying backgrounds.
Wait a second. You go Western Canada and your country
Western.
You go college and their college stuff. Oh, yeah. There's a huge battle in those locker rooms that guys like to keep. But Russell Martin is pretty legit on the music side.
No question about it. But he organized the schedule. We're keeping everybody happy.
Very professional about it.
Nobody can say we're getting short. Anybody's getting short.
See, then
short
I would
change.
Immediately say, what's our record on Tuesdays with that genre? What's our record on what? Then I'd be manipulated.
You would only say that if your genre was producing a winning record.
Oh, absolutely.
It's fake news otherwise.
Absolutely.
Don't let anybody else bring it up.
I'm sure in a Hoops locker room, a lot of the guys listen to their own stuff, though, right? They have their own setups at each stall. In basketball.
Well, you guys talk about this a lot, about how it was back in your day versus how it is now on the charter flights, or in your case, there might not have been charter flights in the earlier days of your career.
Early days there weren't, for sure.
Right. So I mean, guys would get together, they'd play cards in the back of the plane or whatever. Now it's just guys with their headphones in, doing whatever on their iPads or whatever.
Yeah, one of my
whatever.
Favorite nights, Scotty, we got snowed in on a one-day trip to New Jersey. We got snowed in, and no one had power. No one had brought power for any of their devices. So as the trip went on, guys actually started to talk to each other because nobody had power for their phones or, you know, they hadn't.
When was this?
The one-day trip. Circa maybe 2010 or 11.
Okay, so you're talking about Leafs. I'm like, power for your phones when
yeah.
you play?
No.
I hate to do this to you.
So I took the December 26th trip to New Jersey for a day.
Yeah.
And we were snowed in and 5 hours going back to the hotel, a 20-minute drive. So even on the bus, you could see as the power started to die on guys' either iPads or phones, the conversation picked up, and all of a sudden the laughter started, and I was like, this is like old times. Like, guys are actually talking to each other. It's great.
They do get along.
It's great.
When they actually talk.
They had something to talk about.
Yeah. It's so different now. And I'm not saying one way is better than the other. It's just, it's an adjustment through time.
Yeah, but I think in hoops they go individual music at their lockers more so.
Yeah. Everybody's...
That was Mark Cuban put all the individual situations in, you know, all in each locker for each guy, and it was a whole different age.
All right, we're ready to go here. We've been looking forward to this one. Fred VanVleet of the Toronto Raptors is good enough to take some time in the middle of his summer to join us. He's got a brand new contract. Fred, thanks for this. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you on. And this is our first opportunity to talk since you signed the extension with the Raptors. How nice was that for you to get pen to paper and know where you're going to be for at least the next 2 years?
Yeah, really nice. Big sigh of relief and just a confirmation of being back with the Raptors and being back in Toronto for two more years was obviously a huge moment for me and just really, you know, relieving.
Fred, talk to me a little bit about wearing number 23. Growing up in Rockford, and when your decision was, you wear it through college, did you wear it in high school as well?
Yes, I did.
And when did you start wearing number 23?
Must have been about 10 or 11. I used to wear 8 in all the Boys and Girls Club. My favorite player growing up is always been Kobe Bryant. And then for some reason, my brothers, they just, you know, they thought that I played. I was like LeBron of my age bracket. I was so much better than everybody in the way I passed the ball and did everything. So they told me to start wearing 23. Obviously, being from this area, 23 is a legendary number from Michael Jordan. And then, you know, LeBron was the next 23 after that. So those all were inspirations for the number. And then it just kind of turned into my own thing in my hometown.
I was glad when you brought up Michael Jordan, Fred, because I was starting to feel really old as you were talking about Kobe and then you were talking about LeBron. I'm like, there was a pretty good 23 before LeBron. Right.
I knew the Rockford, Illinois thing yeah. would kick in at some point.
There you go, reverting.
Yeah, for sure.
Tell us about the mentality of betting on yourself, Fred, because this is kind of an adage that you live by. And something that you've repeated multiple times.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a lifestyle in a sense of it's multifaceted. It's got its layers to it. I mean, obviously on the base level, there's just this kind of attitude of being, you know, I don't know, underdog or not having the resources or not having the hype or the push behind you. And you're left with, you know, pretty much yourself. It's just this self-made thing that a lot of people can relate to, pulling yourself up from the bottom and trying to make something of it. And then, you know, on the flip side of it is just believing in yourself and having the confidence to, you know, really, if you were betting on yourself, you know, quote unquote, to go all in and be all in on yourself and invest in yourself. And we get so caught up in today's world, worry about what everybody else is doing or what other people think. You know, how about just worry about what you think and what you believe and block everything else out?
Freddie, you are a great case of someone who went to college and developed through four great years and, you know, a Final Four run with Wichita State and such a tremendous college career. And now the NBA is looking forward to the next couple of years in which they may eliminate the need to even go to college for a year. And
right.
Do you have thoughts on that, or the way you were able to develop at your own pace and almost make it, as you just said, on your own terms by the ability to keep going?
Yeah, I think I like the fact if they take the rule out. I mean, it's not a kid's fault if there's an NBA team who wants to draft him and pay him millions of dollars at 18. Who are we to say that kid shouldn't be able to do that? And you know, it's free enterprise, and we live in a capitalist society, so hey, why not? Obviously, you know, in certain cases, it's good for the kids to go and grow up and mature. And I really became a man in college, and so that way, when I stepped foot into the NBA, I was already a grown man. But if a kid's gonna go for 1 year and leave anyway, I don't know how big of a jump the 18 to 19 is, especially if they have no incentive to go to class, to really spend time and get engraved in the culture of college itself. So I think that we're talking about a really small percentage of guys who are actually going to be successful when they don't go to college. They're straight out of high school. That's a really small percentage of the kids. And I mean, I don't see, you know, anything wrong with letting those guys go straight out of high school.
With Fred Van Vliet of your Toronto Raptors, it's Scott MacArthur, Dave Poulin, Overdrive, TSN 1050. What was your reaction, Fred, when you saw that LeBron James left the conference, signed with the LA Lakers?
I didn't have too much of a reaction other than just, you know, being following it like everybody else. I wasn't too surprised. I mean, I think that there were rumblings that he was leaving regardless. But I mean, you know, you just watch it like the rest of the league, like the rest of the world, and see what happens. I'm always a guy who doesn't. The summer is fun because we're bored and we don't have anything else to do, and so we get so invested in these storylines. But at the end of the day, the real fun is going to be when the season starts. So that's when we'll lock in and we'll see what happens with the rest of the NBA. But I think as an athlete and as a professional player, it's really just, you know, trying to focus on your own stuff and making sure that your situation's tight and controlling what you can control.
Yeah, and you understand the reason I ask is that, I mean, the Raptors have run into the proverbial brick wall that is LeBron the last few years in the playoffs, and now he heads west, and there's a sense that maybe that opens up the conference. But to your point, you can control what you can control as a Raptors team, and that is the focus here. You don't concern yourself with player movement elsewhere, because right. I think you can understand, Fred, that the expectation for this team now that LeBron is out of the conference is to go on yet another long playoff run and hopefully represent the East in the final next year.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm not sitting up here lying that I don't understand the thought process behind it. I'm just saying, from my perspective as a player, it doesn't change the way I feel. Like, I felt like we were going to go to the finals last year. And, you know, going through LeBron would have been, you know, a little sweeter, obviously, because he's had our number the last few years. But I'm still thinking, you know, the last, what, conference finals, semifinals, those are tough teams regardless. I don't care who you're playing against. And, you know, the fact that it's not a once-in-a-generation player, maybe that gives you better odds. But at the same time, you still have to play against a great team at the end of the year. So it doesn't change. It doesn't really change anything for us. We still have to have the same mindset, same expectations, and, you know, we get there, good, and if we don't, then it's a failure the same way it was last year.
Dwayne Casey was a big proponent of yours, and he's moved on to Detroit after being let go. Do you like the notion of his replacement being somebody with whom you're already familiar? Nick Nurse, an assistant coach, somebody whose tendencies and traits you're probably already well familiar with.
Yeah. And then, obviously, I owe Coach Casey a lot. And, you know, it's sad to see him go, but it's a big boy business that we're in. And I like Coach Nurse a lot. And, obviously, the familiarity is there. And I'm a young player, so I've never dealt with any of my coaches on any level getting fired. And so to have a guy step in that's going to be a seamless transition is a bonus. And I think that, obviously, that's probably part of the decision-making process. He'll be a lot different from Coach Casey, probably a full 180, but at the same time, you know, the familiarity is there, and it'll take some time to learn him and get used to a few minor tweaks, but essentially it's the same team, and we're going to do a lot of the same things.
With Fred Van Vliet, you just touched on potentially a full 180. He'll be quite different. What are some of the things that you expect will be different under Nick Nurse?
I think a little bit of a more, even more offensive, you know, experimentation. We took a huge jump last year in the way that we played, with the ball moving and player moving and shooting more threes and stuff like that. I think that we'll see some changes. Coach Casey was a big defensive coach, so I think Nurse will bring his own defensive schemes, and maybe we'll be a little bit more aggressive and trying to, you know, speed the game up and be a higher steal team, forcing turnovers and that type of thing. And, you know, Nurse is a really he's just a experimental guy. He's out of the box and unconventional, and I'm looking forward to some of the things that we're going to be doing.
Hey, Freddie, one more shot here for you. I was in to get my hair cut today, and my barber, Andrew's a huge Hoops fan, and it's where we do a lot of our we solve a lot of Hoops issues when I'm getting my hair cut, and I brought up the fact that I was going to chat with you, and he said he has the greatest flow in the league. If he needs a barber in Toronto, you got to let him know my name, because that dude has a great flow. So you got some fans out there, buddy.
Yeah, I appreciate that, man. You know, I'm covered, but if I ever need an extra guy, I'll make sure I'll hit you guys up.
There you go. We'll get you straightened out.
Fred, congratulations on the new deal. Have a great summer. Of course, we're all looking forward to a training camp in just a couple of months, or a little more than 2 months, and I'm sure we'll catch up at some point down the road.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Fred VanVleet, a finalist for the NBA's Sixth Man of the Year, which, you know, here I think we were hoping it'd be him, but it was a former Raptor this year, Lou Williams, who won it. So pretty good company, and a nice find. I mean, these are the types of players if you hit on these types of players, nice little addition for your team. And he was the guy, Pooley, you remember this, you wanted out there in the fourth quarter, and a lot of nights.
You know, this is that four-year college player that, you know, you revert back to. He spoke about the exception going through right out of high school, and it is the exception. And a lot of people have had controversy with the one-year college, you know, one and done, because it was almost nonsensical. It really was. The guy wasn't really even going to class when he was there.
Well, and from the college games perspective, it became about who recruited best.
Boy,
it wasn't about anything else.
Look at Kentucky. Their entire roster would be one and done.
Right. Yeah, it was Calipari.
You know, you weren't building a program. But here's a player who went to a college in, you know, Wichita State, and helped that program immensely, but rebuilt over 4 years and developed his own game to a sense that it was ready to step into the NBA undrafted. So power to a player like that. That's awesome.
It's Scott MacArthur, Dave Pullen on Overdrive, which is delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com. We'll recap the day's top stories as Overdrive rolls on. This is Scott MacArthur and Dave Pullen. I almost said the Scott MacArthur Show. There should be a fine. There should be a fine.
I'm already over
this
it.
Week.
I'm already over it.
Every time I say it, I should be fined $5. We'll pull it up.
They're all about you.
You just made the list.
Here we go. All right, we'll pull it up, and I'll deliver it to a charity of somebody's choosing. By the end of the week, because it's probably going to happen. This is Overdrive. I got it right. TSN 1050. Over under 15 seconds. How much of the Home Run Derby are you watching tonight?
30 seconds.
So you're going over
I'll
15
see how
seconds.
Bregman's
going
to do, yeah.
Oh, yeah? Are you into
this? Yeah, well.
See, I got two cubbies in it with Schwarber and Baez.
Yeah, I got the little LSU connection there for Bregman. So.
But I can't sit through
it. Yeah. It used to be a really big deal. It really did. I mean, it was something you tuned in for.
It's lost its luster. It had a good run. Yeah,
it's lost its luster.
I'm at a point with All-Star games in general. I think the NBA does it really well because it's a destination point, and celebrities like being there as well as the game's top players.
But Scotty, baseball is the one that you should be able to do correctly
because it's played
almost exactly like it's played,
and they're doing it right now that home field advantage in the World Series is no longer a part of it.
Right.
I hated that. And that was a reaction to a tie game. I'm like, who's pissed off that an exhibition game ends up in a tie? Yeah. Are you going to make a pitcher throw four innings to get a result? The team...
But it is the sport that you don't have to run over each other like football or...
Well, unless you're Pete Rose under Ray Fosse.
Yeah, absolutely. Remember it well.
Yeah.
71.
Yeah, I mean, I may tune in. There's something about seeing all those guys out there in their uniforms, but there's no mystery anymore because you see all the West Coast teams. You see the National League teams.
Yeah, one question I probably missed with Pedro was if there is the same sense of excitement from the players.
They seem to want to be there for the most part. For the most part. All right, Gord Miller joins us tomorrow on Overdrive, TSN 1050.